This is podcast number 36 for the Well-Educated Mother's Heart. I'm Arlene Peterson, and today the topic is If You Know the Why. From time to time in all of our lives, something happens that causes us to do a little soul searching, where we examine why we're doing what we're doing. I've had one of those soul searching reviews over the last couple of days, and I just felt to take a little time and share the thoughts that have come to me from that examination, because you actually are right in the center of it. I read a talk by David Bednar, and a phrase from it has been playing out in my mind. If they know the why, they will quickly learn the how. I'm going to place myself in a bit of a vulnerable place here, because I'm exposing some personal thoughts and feelings. Not that I haven't done it before, but I've never put them out so publicly before. But if you're going to take this journey of the heart with me and trust the teachings I'm sharing with you, it's important that you know the why so that you're willing to do the how. I think the why can be traced back to a simple prayer that has been a constant in my life. Lord, please make me an instrument in thy hands. Without him, I am nothing. I am not the founder of the Well-Educated Heart philosophy. I'm a finder. I have more questions than answers, but I love sharing with you what I'm learning along the way. When some of you tell me you want to meet me, it makes me uncomfortable in some ways. Not that I don't want to meet you. I absolutely do. I love you. But like Mr. Rogers used to say, I'm not a fancy person. I stumble over my words in private conversation. I'm awkward and actually very shy. And there's a part of me that worries that you'll be disappointed in me, and that somehow I'll be a stumbling block to the message I feel to deliver. Yet I cannot deny the clear and distinct impressions that have come to me over the years, starting over 10 years ago when I felt to create a small library of books and to call it Libraries of Hope. It was to be filled with books that would give children hope because they would be filled with truth and light. I had no idea how to go about such a thing. More than one person said, you know, children aren't reading very much anymore, especially old books without any pictures. There really isn't a market for what you're doing. And I was asked how I planned on marketing this, what my business plan was, how I was going to get the funds to publish the books. The truth was, I had no business or marketing plans. I didn't exactly know why I was doing what I was doing. I was just doing what I felt I'd been asked to do. And the feeling that I had was to not concern myself with all that. In my heart, I felt that the Lord was preparing a network of mothers, and when the time was right, He was going to start writing messages on my heart, that when I delivered them, it would resonate in their hearts, and these mothers would be drawn to the message and would want to learn more. I believe you are a fulfillment of that promise. For years, the work I was doing was met with apathy and disinterest, and then those messages started coming into my heart. And I've been amazed as I've watched the Lord do His work. I've heard from mothers from around the world, from Australia, New Zealand, from Denmark, Norway, Germany, Italy, Africa, Mexico, from all over the United States, from Alaska to the East Coast. And frequently they say this, I don't know how I found you, but when I heard your message, it resonated in my heart, and I want to know more. When I wonder if the gathering of books is worth the time, I think of a couple of sweet mothers I met at a conference who live in a remote area in Canada. They had internet, but had little access to books. With great emotion, they said that they had found my Library of Hope and were so thankful that they now had books with which to teach their children. If I had millions of dollars and could have hired New York's finest marketing team, they could not have designed a marketing strategy that would have had the direct global reach the Lord has quietly been accomplishing as He gathers mothers one by one. I'm constantly reminded by Him that numbers don't matter. For those of you who are frustrated that your efforts to gather others often seem futile, you're not alone. I think it's worth sharing part of an article I've shared before that addresses this very thing. It was written in 1936 by an Albert J. Nock, and it was entitled Isaiah's Job. The writer started by describing a conversation he had had with a man who felt like he had a philosophy and a message that would save mankind, and that he was going to spend the rest of his life spreading his message far and wide in an attempt to try and reach the masses. Nock said he mustered the courage to tell the man that the masses would not care two pins about his doctrine, and he proceeded to paraphrase the job of Isaiah. In a time of great commotion and unrest, the Lord commissioned the prophet Isaiah to go out and warn the people. He said, in essence, "Tell them what is wrong and why and what is going to happen unless they have a change of heart and straighten up. Don't mince matters. Make it clear that they are positively down to their last chance. Give it to them good and strong and keep on giving it to them. I suppose perhaps I ought to tell you," he added, "that it won't do any good. The official class and their intelligentsia will turn up their noses at you, and the masses will not even listen. They will all keep on in their own ways until they carry everything down to destruction, and you will probably be lucky if you get out with your life." Isaiah had been willing to take on the job, but now a new face was put on it. It raised the obvious question: why, if all that were so, if the enterprise were to be a failure from the start, was there any sense to starting it? "Ah," the Lord said, "you do not get the point. There is a remnant there that you know nothing about. They are obscure, unorganized, inarticulate, each one rubbing along as best as he can. They need to be encouraged and braced up, because when everything has gone completely to the dogs, they are the ones who will come back and build up a new society. And meanwhile, your preaching will reassure them and keep them hanging on. Your job is to take care of the remnant. So be off now and set about it." Now, I make no claims to be an Isaiah or a prophet, far from it, but the same feeling has been placed in my heart: to tend to and strengthen the remnant, even if that number is very small. The writer goes on to say that in any given society, the remnant is always an unknown quantity. He said that when you are called to tend to the remnant, two things you do know and no more. First, that they exist. Second, that they will find you. In fact, they will find you without you doing anything about it. But the Lord knows who they are. Elijah had been given the same job as Isaiah, and he finally fled to the desert because he feared for his life. The Lord asked him what he was doing out there, and his answer implied that he was afraid if he was killed, the truth would die with him. He thought he was the only one left when the Lord told him, "I don't mind telling you that there are 7,000 of them back there in Israel, whom it seems you have not heard of, but you may take my word for it that they are there." Sometimes you may feel all alone. You may feel obscure, inarticulate, rubbing along as best as you can. But the Lord knows you, and you are counted and valued by Him. He takes the weak things of the world and makes them strong. He is an artist, and you are His masterpiece in progress. And how do you know if you are of the remnant? If you love the Lord and seek to do His will, you are of the remnant. Throughout the history of the world, in the middle of chaos and destruction, He is always preparing and preserving seed for a new planting. I know from watching the seasons that winter is necessary for an abundant spring. I've seen the seasons in history. There's no question in my mind that we are living in a day of great harvest. But winter is coming, and the seed must be preserved if there are going to be green shoots in the spring. The Old Testament prophets were masters of imagery and of layered and even hidden meanings. Many interpretations have been given of Malachi's words, where he expressed that the hearts of the children shall be turned to their fathers, and the hearts of the fathers turned to the children, or the whole earth would be wasted. As I study history, I find my heart turning to the wisdom of our fathers. The beauty of our day is that we don't have to start from scratch. We have so many lessons to draw from that teach us how to govern nations, how to live together in harmony, how to live lives of joy and abundance. Many of those lessons come from seeing what hasn't worked. Yet, as I see solutions that are being proposed in today's world, they are coming from a place of total ignorance of how they played out before. History seems doomed to repeat itself because our hearts will not turn to the wisdom of our fathers who came before us and learn from them. Nor do we make decisions based on the consequences our choices will have in the lives of our children and those who come after us. We live very much in a day when we think only of ourselves, what's good for me. We've lost that spirit of the pilgrims who understood they were only laying a foundation for those who followed. Turning 60 a couple of years ago was a turning point in my life for me. I suddenly realized I don't have a whole lifetime ahead. There are things I am not going to be able to do. If I plant a tree in my yard, I may not live long enough to see it grow big enough to give me shade. But the thought struck me, then plant it for those who will come after you, that they can sit under the tree in the shade. I feel that may be one of the messages of Malachi to us. We are the connecting link between the past and the future. We have to look backward and, using the lessons of the past, make wise decisions with an eye to those who will follow us. That is why you see me placing history at the center of all learning at the Well-Educated Heart. But it's history in a broad sense. It's a way of learning the lessons of our fathers. And those lessons have been preserved in art, in music, in literature, in poetry, as well as the pages of historical fact. For me, history is not just a subject in a curriculum to be checked off a list. I keep saying it. There has never, in the history of the world, been a generation that has had access to the wisdom the world has left us, as this generation has. And there is no other group in the world that has the influence on the generations to follow that a mother has. That's why I constantly encourage you to store up the lessons of history in your own heart, to learn the languages of art and music and poetry and fine literature so that you can understand what our fathers are trying to tell us. And then, as you find those gems of wisdom, to preserve them in books of remembrance, not only for you, but for your children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren who will follow. I have a vision of a remnant of mothers of refined tastes who are well-educated, cultured, and articulate. They are to be a force of great influence in the world. That will never happen without effort and of doing hard things. I totally get that you're busy. Like Martha, you are careful and troubled about many things. But I believe, because I've experienced it for myself, that if you have but the desire in your heart, and you will act upon that desire by doing what you can do, the Lord will magnify your efforts, whatever they are. I am hearing that some of you were excited to start studying the Delphian course, but when you got into it, lost interest. I encourage you to not give up. This course was designed for mothers who are busy, who may only be able to spend 15 minutes a day. If there is not even 15 minutes in your day to stockpile your heart, you may want to step back and look at priorities of what is filling your day. I can think of no better source for a crash course through history upon which to continue building because of its emphasis on the arts. The arts reveal lessons that are often lost in textbooks. They contain the wisdom of the ages. The reading may be hard. It may make you stretch, but that's a good thing, not a bad thing. To make the reading meaningful, look for the wisdom, the lessons, and write them in your books of remembrance, not just for you, but for those who will come later. If you have to skim through parts that are way beyond your comprehension, then do that. As you gather understanding through many sources, the pieces will begin to fit together, and when you return, it will have more meaning to you. Or maybe just start with the study guide questions. But please, don't give up. For those who are reading, a natural thing that is happening is that they want to talk about what they're reading. It's called conversation, another of the lost arts, but one of the most satisfying things we can do with each other, this wonderful interchange of ideas and perspectives. If you can find even one person to have a conversation with, start there. And if there is no one nearby, there's an online conversation going on you can take part in. And one more thought resting on me for today. Don't get caught in the letter of what you're reading. Don't make it a checklist. There's something beyond the words themselves that you are looking for. Like Mr. Rogers taught, it will be a voice found in the white space between the lines. And something just happened that happens frequently to me. In the moment that I'm looking for words to express something, it comes to me in unexpected ways. As I was trying to find a way to say what I was going to say, I just got a text from my daughter in Utah. It's early in the morning there. She was getting ready for work, but picked up an old favorite book of hers, The Weight of Glory by C.S. Lewis. She texted me and said, "I found a quote I thought you might like." And I did. It's perfect. So I'm going to end today's ramblings with the wisdom of C.S. Lewis. Quote, "The books or the music in which we thought the beauty was located will betray us if we trust to them. It was not in them. It only came through them, and what came through them was longing. For they are not the thing itself. They are only the scent of a flower we have not found, the echo of a tune we have not heard, news from a country we have never yet visited." And as to the white space learning, Lewis continued, "Almost our whole education has been directed to silencing this shy, persistent inner voice." Close quote. Words to ponder as you consider the why and how of what you're doing. Bye-bye. See you next time.